This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens. This week's guest owes a lot of his success to me. At a previous job, I worked across the street from the Gregory's Coffee on West 46th Street here in New York City, and I'm pretty sure I personally paid their store's rent for an entire year with the number of espresso shots I purchased from them on a daily basis. If you're in the New York area, you're likely familiar with Gregory's Coffee. It started with one location in 2006 and has since expanded to 30 throughout New York, New Jersey, and a couple in Washington, D.C. So back in 2006, the then 26-year-old founder, Gregory Zamfotis, now you know why it's called Gregory's, had a business degree and a law degree, but he didn't want to go through life just earning a nice paycheck. He wanted to do something he loved. Talking about his future with his dad while sitting in a Starbucks, he realized that the answer was sitting right there on the table in front of him, coffee. He wanted to make and sell really great coffee and create an awesome experience around it. Basically, the idea was to create a spot for people who love the artisan flair of a boutique coffee shop but want the speed and convenience of a Starbucks and a Dunkin' Donuts. Not everyone has 20 minutes to wait for that perfect pour-over cup. His idea worked out, as evidenced by the aforementioned 30 locations. Gregory stopped by the office to talk about his highly caffeinated journey and shared his tips for building a brand and a business. He also talked about the company's accidental sale of an illegal substance. Whoops! But we'll get to all that after this quick word. Do you have a math whiz or a science-obsessed kid in your life? I do. My son Gus is 12, and ever since he was little, he's been collecting rocks, leaves, and much to my wife's horror, dead bugs he finds in the backyard. So I was very excited to check out KiwiCo, a monthly subscription box that comes with awesome STEAM projects for kids. STEAM, as you may know, stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Math. KiwiCo has broken down their monthly crates into 7 different age categories. I signed up Gus for the Tinker crate, which is aimed at kids 9 to 16. His first crate came with a build-your-own walking robot, which I have to say was pretty awesome. I really had to stop myself from grabbing it from him and doing it myself. But one thing I instantly loved was that the crate came with everything he needed to build it. I didn't have to run to the store or find him glue or anything. It was all there. And the project had very clear directions, so he could really just get in there and do it himself without any help from me at all. Gus had a blast with this and was super proud of his robot when he was done. Another thing I thought was really cool about it is that it isn't like a Lego set that you build exactly step by step the way they tell you to. The instructions gave room for personalizing and he really made it his own. So now we have a miniature robot walking around the house, which beats having a dog I have to clean up after, if you ask me. If this sounds like something you'd want to check out, you're in luck. KiwiCo is offering How Success Happens listeners the chance to try them out for free. How cool is that? Go to kiwico.com/success to learn about the offer and pick a project. And now, my conversation with the Gregory behind Gregory's Coffee. So for anyone listening right now, you're probably in a warm and dry place, as are we, but minutes ago, my guest was not. He was braving Superstorm 2019 in an aircast. So we thank him for arriving. Gregory Zamfotis, the founder and CEO of Gregory's Coffee. How'd you come up with that name, Gregory's Coffee?
So research groups, polling, lots of it. No. You know, just pretty straightforward. I had a passion for coffee at the time and wanted to start something on my own. And you know, really wanted to pour everything I had into this brand, so it just felt like a natural thing to do.
So you are not an old man sitting across from me. How old are you, if I can ask?
So I'm 36. I'll be 37 in 16 days.
Wow, okay. And how long has Gregory's Coffee been around?
13 years. So I was a puppy when we started this.
Okay.
I look back at pictures and I'm like, I don't know how anybody took me seriously back then. I look very, very young. But I was always very, very serious about running the business and cared deeply about its success. So I was wise beyond my years maybe at that
time. Okay. Well, that's great. That's great. That's great to have that confidence. And I'm sure that confidence is what sold it to people you were meeting with. But why don't we just sort of take a step back to that moment or that time frame in your life? You know, what made you say, hey, you know, there's a Starbucks on every corner. I've got an idea. I'm going to open up a coffee shop.
Yeah. I guess it starts, I mean, probably starts when I'm like, what, 3 years old. My father was in the fast casual food business in Manhattan my whole life. And I sort of grew up having a father in that business and helping him and seeing what he did. Mm-hmm. So he had those classic New York City style delis, you know, 24-hour type of places, served mm-hmm. everything. So in the 80s, when I was growing up in the city, I kind of experienced what it was like to have a family that was involved in that kind of business. So from swatting flies when I was 3 to making deliveries when I was 9 or 8, whatever, however old I was. But I would say I have kids now, and I can't imagine sending my 7 or 8-year-old on a delivery in Manhattan. But my father was like, go for it. And, you know, I was blessed with having all this crazy amount of experience working in food service my whole life. That being said, he never wanted me to go into this business. It was always, you do whatever you want, or he didn't want to force me into working for him. I went to undergraduate business school thinking I was going to go into banking.
Okay.
I had a cousin who did it and was very successful, and it seemed like a great way to earn a living. After dipping my toe in that water a little bit, a couple internships, I realized that maybe it wasn't for me.
Well, not to cut you off, but I think that's a big thing. There's a lot of people in the entrepreneurial world who realize, like, well, this corporate gig is not for me. So what was it about it that wasn't for you?
I think it was the idea of, in banking, it just seemed like I was always dealing with other people's money. And, you know, a little bit of salesmanship, kind of like getting, you know, just seemed like I was trying to put other people's money to work for them. And everywhere I worked or I was talking to people, it was like, well, you get this information from an analyst and they tell you, like, hey, this is what we should be working on, and then you need to get these people to put their money to work with the things that we tell you what to do. And it just seemed like less creative, less, it just didn't seem as interesting to me. It was just kind of like a little bit of salesmanship, a little bit of kind of like number crunching, staring at things. And all in all, it just seemed like I wasn't super thrilled with the prospect of doing this for the rest of my life.
Right.
And that being said, I would have fully done it had I not sort of spoken to advisors and convinced myself that maybe pursuing law would be a more interesting take on the business side of things. So
okay.
I was thinking about corporate law and reading all these cases and what it would be like to take that aspect of things, whether it's, you know, mergers and acquisitions or complicated cases or working on things like that seemed like it could be an interesting avenue for me, a little bit more, you know, it wouldn't be the same thing every day. It could be like, depending on what you're doing, it could be very interesting, all based around corporate sort of work. But I thought that would be interesting to me. And then a similar sort of thing happened. I went to law school. I came back to New York to go to law school. Actually wound up working in a real estate firm after my first summer. And same sort of thing. I felt like I could do this job. I felt like I was good at it. They offered me a position. But I said to myself, I think I could do this for a little while, maybe make enough money, and then I'm probably going to want to do something on my own. I can't imagine sitting at a desk, staring at screens and, you know, boring myself to death just to make money for the rest of my life. There was no passion there. And I think that's what it all came down to, is I realized, you know, these were all ways of earning a living, and it wasn't going to be passion for me. It was just like money, right? Like I'm going to do this job to get paid, and then I can't wait to go home and do something else, or think about what I would want to do when I grow up, right?
When
I grow up, I want to have my own restaurant, I have my own gym, or whatever it was at the time. So after having these thoughts in my head, and my father used to come visit me at the law school. He had a deli right across the street from the school. So he'd come stop by, see the store, come see me. We'd go to the local Starbucks, have our macchiatos. We thought we were very cosmopolitan. We didn't know cappuccino. It was always a macchiato. And, you know, I kind of spoke to him to say, or I had this realization, like, hey, my father is an established, you know, business person. He's got multiple, like, businesses around the city. Why don't I talk to him about the thought of helping or working at one of his locations, but not in the sense of helping my father, more about potential career path for me.
Right.
So at first he thought it was a little strange. I'm in law school and I'm going to start working at his deli or whatever it is. I'm like, well, listen, it's right across the street. I think I could do both. And I really want to understand if working in the food business is something that would excite me. And he was like, well, if that's something you're interested in, we could definitely make that happen. So in the middle of my second year of law school, I jumped in and started managing his shop right across the street from my school. My grades suffered a little bit, but I didn't stay in the top 10% or wherever okay. I was previously. But I really enjoyed the work, creating things with my hands, being on my feet, interacting with people, putting systems into place that could kind of increase efficiency or to make things run smoother, make things run quicker, just managing people. All these things excited me, and I felt very energized, and I was seeing results where the store was improving. So I was pretty sold on the fact that running that kind of business is something that I would be interested in.
Right.
That specific business was definitively my father's. That was not my thing. So coming back to the whole Starbucks situation where we used to sit there and chat, once I had started working at that store and I had more context about running that business from the mindset of an owner, I kept saying to myself what I would do differently if I had my own coffee shop. And then I pull up a map of Manhattan. I'm saying to myself, it's really just Starbucks in Midtown. If you want like a nicer quality coffee, there are good places, but they were in the East Village or Brooklyn or Lower East Side or Chelsea. If you went to the heart of the city where the majority of workers were spending their days working or going to school or whatever it is, it was really Starbucks, Dunkin', or maybe like deli coffee, cart coffee.
Right.
So I saw this huge opportunity to be like, you know, I felt very confident in myself to run a business having basically worked in them my entire life and then also like now spending this intensive period while I was going to school running the store. So I spoke to my father and said, I think I want to open a coffee shop. And he was like, that sounds like a great idea. I think it's a great opportunity. And that was it. He helped me get started and we're off to the races from there.
Okay, so you're off to the races from there, but I mean, it's so for those who are maybe not in this area and aren't as familiar with Gregory's Coffee, so do you start with one location? Did you have a plan for multiple locations? How did that go?
So yeah, when we got started, we just wanted to kind of understand what it was like to run this business. And so the first store we have on 24th and Park Avenue across from Credit Suisse headquarters, you know, at that time, we still had the other businesses, right? I was still actually managing the deli that I was running across from my father's store. So I had that while also running the coffee shop. So the coffee shop in the beginning wasn't cash flowing or making crazy money to sustain, you know, paying salaries, all this kind of stuff. So it was sort of not a passion project because I felt confident in it, but it wasn't making enough money yet.
Right.
So we had the other businesses that were established and doing well while we were getting I was getting the coffee program up and running at the store. And it did take some time to get it where we wanted it to be. And in the beginning, people were just excited to have an alternative to Starbucks because historically that's all that they had. And then I was fortunate enough to start this business right as this, they call it the third wave of coffee, was really sort of taking off, this idea of coffee is a specialty beverage, you know, latte art on every cup, understanding where your beans came from, not just a country, but where in the country and who the farmers were that were producing it and the style of coffee that they were producing. And thinking about flavor notes like wine, right? Like,
right.
Now, if you think about wine that tastes like pear and plum, like that sounds normal to most people, but if you said that about coffee a long time ago, people were like, what do you talk? Coffee tastes like coffee.
Right.
So all these things that were happening in the industry, I was able, like techniques and procedures and understanding the coffee program a little more, I was weaving into what I was doing at the store, like kind of live as I would go to a conference. This is a brand new thing. I'd put it right in the store. So now you see latte art everywhere. But when that was happening in 2008, you know, everybody was like, it was very shocking to see this. So once I started doing that in the store a little bit more, we started to separate ourselves more and more from the Starbucks experience, where people weren't just like, oh, they're just another option. Now it's like, oh, they're actually doing things significantly better. And it started to help us build more of a following.
So when you're developing that, do you have like, is there a saying in your head? Is there a picture in your head? Is there something for you that defined this is what Gregory's Coffee is? And what was that? And then how did you communicate that with other people? Because obviously, there's only so much one person can do in an endeavor like this.
Right. So, again, growing up in this business, my father had, you know, multiple styles of fast casual food concepts over the years. But I think something he had always instilled in me was, you know, how to continue winning over customers and create more value for them. And I think, you know, being in Midtown Manhattan or financial district, like hustle, bustle, busy, everybody's on the run. It was always, if you can make a great product, get it to somebody in a relatively fast manner, have a great atmosphere, great customer service, and obviously have a price point that's reasonable. Like these pillars, you know, that stand, if you could do all of these things well or really well, it's very challenging to do it. And that's why not that many people can do it.
Right.
And if you can do those things, customers are really going to connect with you. So to make it even more succinct, I think it was the idea of quality and quantity. So in coffee, I found there were a lot of places you could get a good cup of coffee, but you would expect to invest 15 to 20 minutes in that experience. And you're probably investing $4 or $5 at a minimum for that cup of coffee. And for a lot of people, that's a turnoff, or it's a detractor where you're on their way to work at 9 in the morning, 8 in the morning. Not everybody has 20 minutes to spend getting their coffee, and not
right.
everybody wants to spend $5 on a drip coffee, right?
Right.
So I wanted to bridge that gap so I could deliver high quality coffee like you might find at some of these more boutique one-off coffee shops, but serving the quantity of people you'd find at a Dunkin' Donuts or a Starbucks. So, There weren't really anybody, still I don't really find anybody that does it well that can do that, where they put systems in place where you can serve 300 customers in an hour and maintain a high level of quality. And it's just not an easy thing to do while delivering great customer service. And it's just instilling in our culture and our people that this is something that's important to us and that I pay attention, I care deeply about it, and they see me. If I see things struggling or not working, I just jump right back there and help them. Even today, still, like I was making lattes 20 minutes ago at a store, just because I can do it. I'd still love to do it. It's a passion of mine.
Yeah.
I'm not just like a guy who pushes pencils and, you know, sits behind computer screens. I genuinely love creating products and being and interacting with people. And if I see I can help, I will do it. And I just love. I love it.
And you, so for people who are familiar with your logo, it's you. Sitting across from you, it's a pretty good likeness.
Yeah, that was not so much of an accident. I think, you know, as the company grew from one location to now, we've just opened our 30th location about 2 months ago. It's an interesting thing sort of happened where when we had the one location, I was in the store 70 to 80 hours a week. So people very much associated Gregory's with me because I was just always there.
Yeah.
But then as the company continued to grow, obviously I may have a picture on the wall or whatever it is, but I'm not there. So people started to say, who is Gregory? Or, you know, is he around? Or is this a real person? And you know, the image, the likeness on the logo, sort of transposes a person or to the brand, and it becomes something you remember. And it looks, you know, it's two coffee cups and a mop of hair, but it kind of looks like my glasses, people can very quickly identify that image with the brand. And if you feel connected to the person that it stands for, which, you know, still looks like me, but you know, if I wear contacts, people really go crazy on me. If I ever were to cut my hair, forget about it. It would be a disaster for the brand. I'd have to do a massive rebrand. But I feel like
so invest in Propecia or something.
Yeah,
make sure, hold on for dear life.
I'm a big believer in the hair products and making sure it always looks on point. You know, for sure.
So are you? So with 30 locations and they're not all just here in New York, where are you based? I mean, where are you spread out now?
So, yeah, we've got 23 locations in Manhattan, one in downtown Brooklyn, two in Jersey City, and four in Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
So the last one we just opened was in Washington, D.C. in December of 2018. So that was our real first foray outside of this metro New York area, which was interesting.
So do the managers of the D.C. area, you know that on any given day you might walk through the door? Do you give people heads up? How does that work?
No, it's very much a surprise. I'm fortunate now with this whole computing revolution with the cloud. I mean, I really don't have to be in an office so much. So I have a backpack and I've got my laptop and a few pads and a few pieces of paper and a couple folders, and I can be anywhere at any time. So I'm you know, very much like that Larry Bird type of guy where I like to be the first person in, the last person out. So they see me at 6:30 in the morning, and they might see me at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, and all throughout the day. And it's very much like, where's my day taking me? I could be anywhere at any time.
Right.
New York, DC, you know, the other morning I rolled in at like 7:45 in one of the DC stores, and the store leader didn't know. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And he's here. I'm like, yep, let's go.
Yeah.
Start digging right in and talking about some stuff. And I really like interacting with the team and with the guests for sure. But I think, you know, being around, bouncing around from store to store, it just like energizes me, and I get really excited about it. And the more I'm in an office, the more I feel back to those days where I'm like, this is something I never really wanted to do.
Right.
So staying connected to the day-to-day is super important to me, and also just kind of continues to make me excited day in and day out about being in this company and doing all these things.
So how many cups of coffee do you think you drink a day?
That's a pretty loaded question, right? So probably anywhere from like 8 to 10 cups a day.
Okay.
But I think with the proliferation, a lot of these like not coffee drinks we've been doing lately, like matchas and turmeric lattes, which I actually really enjoy. It's nice to break it up where, you know, I'll have, I always start off with a shot of espresso and a small filter coffee in the morning. And then from there, it's like some espresso, some more coffee, espresso coffee, cold brew here and there, sprinkle it in, and then probably a turmeric latte and a matcha throughout the day. So I'm doing it because I enjoy it, but I also, when I'm going from store to store, I like to do just a little quality control.
Yeah,
I want to make sure everything tastes good, interacting with the staff so I could talk about how it tastes with them, so make sure they're plugged in with how I'm thinking about things. And It's a constant labor of love, you know. Unfortunately, I have to drink so much coffee all day, but you know, I think a lot of other people wouldn't mind it so much.
Yeah, right, right. Well, I definitely do drink that much anyway. So, you know, speaking of products, I think this is a good segue to talk about. You're constantly innovating, trying new things, and one of those things, which is a tremendous trend in food and all kinds of things, is CBD oil. So why don't you explain what you're thinking there and what's the product?
So it's interesting timing, actually, because the New York City Health Department recently said we're not allowed to sell it anymore.
Right.
But I mean, maybe the easiest way to explain it is probably about 3 to 4 years ago, where I really started to make a bigger push into healthier food items. I've always been a pretty health conscious person, but when I wanted to kind of really incorporate a lot of things that I was doing outside of the store into what was happening. So whether it was vegan or gluten free pastries or grab and go items, things that I felt like I wanted to be eating during the day, snacks or small meals. I wanted to say, like, why should I have to go somewhere else to get these things? They're things that we're selling similar products in our store.
Yeah.
But they're not necessarily things that I would eat. They're things that I think our customers really enjoy and they eat plenty of. But I wanted to put more things in the store that me as a, if I was the consumer, I would be selling to myself a little bit more. So infusing a lot more of my own, you know, preferences into the brand. And then probably about 2 years ago, I became a pescatarian. So, vegan plus fish, probably the easiest way to explain it. And probably even the third piece was that my son, when he was born about 3 years ago, he had a dairy sensitivity. So we wound up having to cook a lot more dairy-free at home.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things start to force you to look at whether it's blogs or restaurants or getting inspired by, you know, how to make things that are healthy taste good, or when you're used to cooking a certain way, everything is cooked with butter or cooked with whatever. How do you remove that item or that ingredient and still make a great product? So just really get your juices flowing, literally, about how can I introduce more interesting new things to at home and in the store. So
yeah.
Really having my ear to the ground about what's going on in interesting new products. And CBD oil was one that probably about, I don't know, 9 months to a year ago, I started reading a lot about and its benefits and why people were interested in it. And a lot of places were starting to cook with it or to infuse it into beverages. So I brought it to my team and we bought some, and started playing around with recipes and seeing how we thought it might work. We created a drink. We called it the hashtag CBD, but it was, an oat milk latte with, CBD oil, as well as a tiny bit of strawberry syrup. So it kind of had this, like, I don't know, strawberry Yoo-Hoo or strawberry, strawberry gummy bear type of taste to it. I thought it was a great, a really delicious product, and people were really into it. And we could add the CBD oil to any, we were allowing you to add it to anything we were serving. You could just drop it right in.
Right.
And it just seemed like a natural fit with what we were doing, whether it's, you know, we had charcoal lattes or matcha lattes, turmeric lattes, products that were not necessarily based around coffee, but they were a nice alternative for somebody like myself, where I drink a lot of coffee during the day. If you want something different, but it's the similar style of product. With the passage of the Farm Bill making hemp not part of the Controlled Substance Act, there was just sort of seemed like this gray area where people were serving it, but we weren't sure how it was going to be handled. You know, we had multiple health inspections and getting A grades. You know, we thought we were doing the right thing. And then the health department started to announce that they were going to be serving violations for it. So it only happened to us at one location just a week or so prior. We were waiting to find the results of that before we did anything. When they came down and told us, yeah, you can't serve this right now. We're not deeming it legal as an additive. Then we pulled it from the menus here in New York City. So unfortunate, because people are really into it. They like it. Not only do they enjoy the beverage, but they're interested in that as a product. You know, we're keeping our ears to the ground about if things were to change, but we're also continuously looking for other things that could be interesting for replacing it on the menu.
So when you say, you know, let's talk a little bit about the development. Like, what's the Gregory's Coffee test kitchen like? Is it you and a couple of people and you're just mixing stuff, or like, how does that work?
Yeah. So I guess it depends on the avenue, right? So my father still works with us. He's kind of the mastermind behind all of our food products. So I give him a lot of kudos for bearing with me as this veganism and gluten-free, because it's not easy to bake and cook with these sorts of things, especially in a production where we're doing it for 30 stores, to make a lot of things taste really good like that. So over the years, where I keep introducing, I want to introduce a gluten-free banana chocolate chip muffin. He's like, really? Why can't we just do a regular version? I'm like, believe me, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And then he would, you know, he'll come up with a few iterations of it, and then if it works, we'll load it into the stores. So food products, I guess he and I sort of bounce ideas off each other a lot, and launch products that way. When it comes to beverages, especially specific coffee things, you know, my coffee team, my roasters, my director of education, my director of coffee, we'll work together, kind of launch mainly new coffee products. Not coffee things, probably more on my end, where I'll kind of push to try new things. And then I have people whose palates I trust, whether it's my coffee team, my father, my sister, who also works for us. You know, my chief of staff, he's kind of like right alongside me a lot of the time, like, really in my brain about what we like and what we don't like, and helping me execute on a lot of these things.
That's cool.
I have a pretty good trusted team that, you know, understands where we're trying to go and things that work and things that don't work so well. So we can kind of collectively come up with a really great strategy to roll out new products. And, you know, as we try and stay on the cutting edge and introduce new things, it's not always easy to understand, well, are people going to like this? Like, nobody's doing anything like this. But I think, you know, collectively, if the grouping of us is feeling something tastes really good, then we have a pretty good feeling about how it's going to do in the stores.
How long do you give something a shot until you say, all right, I like this, but no one else on earth did?
I think like...
Or has that happened?
It has happened for sure. There's definitely failures out there. Yeah. You know, probably 2 months is probably the shelf life I'll give where if we're introducing it, we're sampling it, we're promoting it, we are really making a push behind it and you don't see the needle moving at all, then we'll give that valuable menu space or
right.
Those sort of things to a new item or something different.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's definitely things where I'm like, this is it. I think this is going to be such a great product. I love it. Everybody on my team is like, yeah, it seems like it's going to be a good idea. And then we put it out there and it's just like total flop.
Yeah.
Like, man, am I just way off here? And of course that happens sometimes. And then other times you put some stuff out there and people like go crazy for it. So, you know, we're not afraid to, you know, to fail. And I think that's, you know, any entrepreneur, you can't be. Because, I mean, I would have, like a lot of people, like you said in the beginning, like, you know, opening a coffee shop right across from Starbucks in Manhattan seems like, yeah, why didn't 30 other people think of these things? Like, yeah, $90 billion company, seems like an easy target, right? but I think if you're afraid to fail, you'll never try. And I think, you know, my whole thing is, you know, I'm not afraid to try. I'm not afraid to put myself out there. And I know I'm going to work harder than just about anybody else out there.
Yeah.
And if I fail, it's, you know, it's not because I didn't try or not because I didn't put everything into it. It'll be for some other reason because, you know, somebody didn't like CBD oil or CBD is not legal. So I shouldn't be selling it or things like this.
Now, do you see this energy that you have and this passion for it, clearly that you have a lot of, is it about expanding this to other states and other cities? Do you think that there'll come a time where you're doing Gregory's Coffee and something totally different, all of the above?
So, as we've continued to grow the company and kind of, you know, the brand continues to evolve into this, like, you know, new thing, it always feels like things are changing at a lightning speed, whether it was like introducing latte art to now it's like, you know, the complete package of what a cafe and what a coffee shop experience is becoming for people these days. And it's always been they want more than just the coffee. It's
right.
The somewhere to stay, somewhere to interview, somewhere to read the newspaper, to chat with your barista, to learn about new things. And it's become this kind of destination for just great products. A place that people trust to not only have a great experience, it's comfortable and warm for them to stay and hang out, but also like enjoying great food and beverage items. So I feel like as we've continued to develop this brand and to kind of become what we are today, I do want to have this brand travel and to take it to places like DC and other cities. I feel like everywhere I go, I feel like, man, Gregory's would be great here. Or I get it a lot of time. People are like, please come to Miami, please come to Chicago, like we need you, or you know, there's just not enough places that are trying to even do what we do, that when people come here and experience it here in New York or in DC or Jersey City, like, man, this is fantastic. I wish I had something like this where I'm from.
Yeah.
And the more I hear that, it just gets my juices flowing even more.
Oh, like,
man, I really feel like we should be doing this other places. And I feel like that is the goal, I believe, is to take this more places and continue to grow the brand and share the love with more people around the country, around the world, you know?
That's great. And one final note, question, I guess. You know, there's been one notable CEO of a coffee company who's running for president. So is that, am I sitting across from the future president of the United States of America?
You know, it's funny. Growing up, my grandfather always said I would be the first Greek. I'm Greek, half Greek, half Italian, but he used to say I would be the first Greek president. After Michael Dukakis flamed out, you know, there haven't been too many other Greek American presidential candidates. But then I became the president of my church youth group, and I said, oh, okay, I got the president bug out of my system. I ran the church youth group for a few years. I am at the moment, I am not a political person at all. I'm very focused on running the company and making it a huge success. No one knows what the future will hold, but you know, Howard is an interesting guy, and you know, it's interesting to see him, you know, how he talks about his business experience and relating it to potentially running the country. I cannot even imagine doing anything else right now. I'm just so obsessed with our company and what we're doing and making it a success. And, you know, I could see a very long runway ahead of me at growing Gregory's and even trying to get even close to where he is, where right. he took his company. I think it's very admirable, and I'd love to be in his position at someday. Who knows how I'll get there, but I'm excited.
We'll put you down for a yes then.
Okay. We'll say what, 2036 maybe. Who knows? Right, maybe 18 right. years.
Great. Well, until then, we'll enjoy lots of great lattes. I think I personally kept one of their shops. I forget if it's 45th or 46th Street on the west side. I went there. It was across the street from where I used to work and went there basically every day.
So, okay, well, I appreciate the support.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for all this great advice. I'm sure people got a lot out of it, and
awesome.
Hopefully it's got them amped up like a triple shot of espresso.
Sounds like my morning every day, but yeah, happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and awesome.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and for our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.